From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. You're going to get to know some people at Cap Radio a little bit better this hour. As we head into the holidays, we've been having sideline conversations about how our families, traditions, and just some wacky stories that capture how unique and varied our experiences are. It's really been a lot of fun learning about what the holidays mean and what they don't mean from one person to the next. So we thought to share these stories with you, and perhaps it'll spark some personal memories to share with others. We're going to get the ball rolling with Cap Radio's new midday host, Laura West, and Insight assistant producer, Victor Corral Martinez, about how being mixed race opens up a pretty wide palette for a Thanksgiving feast. Well, Laura, I want to start with you. You are our newest additions, or one of our newest additions to Cap Radio as our midday host, and we got to read your bio. You have a pretty interesting childhood.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, it was varied, no doubt. I grew up as an Air Force brat in the Philippines. I was actually born on an Air Force base in the Philippines. So half Filipino, half Sicilian. My earliest memories of being around the table in the Philippines were that mom would set food on my plate, but there is a tradition that when Filipinos are at home, they eat with their hands. They don't use the utensils. They save that for when they're out at a restaurant. And so when mom would feed me with her hands, even though it was the same food on both of our plates, mom's hands were magic, but she tried not to spoil me and had to wean me off that kind of baby bird feeding, if you will. Mom became a widow, and we by then had moved to Sacramento, California, and she remarried, and dinners were a blending of Filipino food, pancit, adobo, lumpia.
You're making me hungry.
And of course, a turkey. And that was kind of cool. And from here, we had the opportunity in my teens to move to the Navajo Nation. And so then our table expanded from all of the things I just mentioned, and then the addition of fry bread, Navajo fry bread, as they say.
It's delicious.
It's so good.
Not necessarily good for you, but delicious nonetheless. Perfect for the holidays.
They say the secret is bluebird flour. And all the Navajo Nation houses had huge sacks of bluebird flour. But so then our table then included Navajo tacos, which are frat bread, chili beans, cheese, lettuce, tomato, and onion. And oh, boy, I mean, where do we start, right? So much bounty.
Yeah.
And
for the three of us here, and we're here with Victor Corral Martinez, who is Insight's producer, we're all mixed race. And so it makes the holidays so interesting. You're Sicilian and Filipino. I'm Mexican, Japanese, and English. And Victor, you have some Filipino in you as well as Mexican. And both of us are from Southern California, Los Angeles area.
Yep. Yeah, I'm Filipino, Mexican, and a couple generations American. So like our food is a mixture of traditional American food, Filipino Hawaiian food, and then traditional Mexican food.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, a lot of carbs.
That sounds like heaven. So tell me a little bit about the Mexican food.
Yeah, so traditionally during the holidays and around this time, we start to eat tamales, and we'll have pozole. And that's where it starts to get controversial is there's like three different types of pozole, especially amongst Mexicans. We have a green, red, and a white one. And so depending on the person, someone might make the red one, someone might make the green one, and then it's like, which one's better? It's like a football game.
It could be like Christmas, though. You get green and red.
Yeah, you get green, red, and then one of the things that we do traditionally, so I don't know if you guys ever seen the George Lopez show where he goes to like a Mexican restaurant, and that's he's based out where in my neighborhood in San Fernando in Los Angeles, and so traditionally what we do like on a Saturday or Sunday, leading up to like the holidays and before the holidays, we'll go. You bring like a 40-quart pot, and they'll fill it up with menudo or pozole, and then you buy like two dozen of tamales, And they make fresh flour and corn tortillas to go with the pozole menudo. So we eat that as well. And we'll stop at the local bakery in the area. And they make all the conchas and the pan dulces. So a lot of carbs, a lot of heavy stuff, but delicious.
Yeah, I made tamales last holiday from scratch. And it is a feat. You know, you really savor every bite. It took me like a couple days, me and a friend. And we made like, I think over 100, maybe 200. Oh, wow. We did chicken and then we did a vegetarian one, you know, like jalapenos and cheese as well. But I hadn't done that since I was a kid. And you really remember like the sweat equity and the time that goes into preparing tamales.
Yeah, my family, we used to do that. Not as much as my grandmother got older. That was more of like my mom and her siblings that would do that. But we've go to this place called Chacon's Liquor Store. And it's not a liquor store. It's like a quickie mart type place, but they do sell like the corn husk, the masa, kind of like all the ingredients you would need to build tamales, because it's very time consuming. Just to make one tamal is just a lot of work. So I can understand the appreciation for for eating tamales, and because there's a lot of work and you need a team. It's like you need a
assembly. Like,
yeah. Exactly. There is an assembly line. Yeah. It was hard with two people because you're used to having more, you know, and, you know, one has the husks and then you put the masa and then you put the filling and then you wrap it up and you got to steam it, right?
Yeah, we would have someone that would, their responsibility would be to make sure all the hairs come off the corn husk. And because you don't want to eat the hairs from that. And then someone is, you know, cooking all the meat and the marinating. And then there'll be someone that has the spoon. Usually the best person at making tamales is the one that like spreads the masa on the corn husk. They're usually, whoever's the best or the leader is the one that like kind of leads the way. And then
it looks easier than it actually is. Yeah.
To try to get the masa even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That really smooth kind of like just kind of scrape, you know, down the husk is actually pretty difficult.
Mm. Yeah. And that's one thing that I learned later on is Central Americans, a lot of my friends are Salvadoran, Guatemalan in L.A. And the way they do theirs is actually heavier masa. It's more masa than meat. And it's interesting, like, that's just how their style is, but they have an interesting way. And then they also do, like, I don't know if you guys ever had, it's like, they call it bovo, it's turkey meat, but it's like in a French roll, and they stuff it with, like, bean sprouts and, like, different vegetables, carrots, and they eat it like a sandwich, like a turkey sandwich, and that's traditionally what Central Americans eat for Thanksgiving. And so that's, and I think one of the times, like for Thanksgiving, for me, it's like there's people bringing food over, you bringing food to people. Like if I made tamales and I put so much work into it, I want everyone to try it. I want to be like, I did this. And so in the same way that different families will bring tamales and they'll bring their variations, like somewhat like certain parts of my family are known for making like the dessert tamales. The tamales.
Oh, yeah. The dulce.
Yeah, so they'll make I've had like a strawberry one, like a raisin cinnamon one. So pretty much anything that could be like a bagel topping, it could be a tamal.
You know, Laura, you know, you have such like a wide array of ingredients and plates that you can add to Thanksgiving because of your life experiences and your childhood growing up. Are there any that you carry over now into the holidays?
I'm so glad you said that because as you were talking, first of all, I didn't realize that there was a singular term for tamales. We kept saying tamales, so learn something new. Thank you. There is a dish made probably everywhere, different variations, called ensaimada. And it is a yeasty dough that you roll out like a thin garden snake. And then you put it in these scalloped round baking cups, and you roll it into what looks like a pastry that we would get, cinnamon raisin pastry, but it's not that. And then it's essentially the Filipino version of cheese Danish. It's rolled with sugar and then put cheese on top and bake them, and it's very labor intensive. And so every Christmas, because I by then had moved back from Arizona to here, to Sacramento, my mom would make couple dozen of those and send them to me individually wrapped in wax paper. And I would get that box, and it was Christmas. It was Christmas. And it meant so much that my mom did that. And so I'd put more cheese on, of course, and give it a little nuke in the microwave to warm it, and then you could freeze them. And, you know, since Mom has recently went to heaven, there are no more boxes of Ensaymada coming. But what my mom did for me is she made a handwritten cookbook of all of her Filipino dishes.
That's invaluable.
And when I get the strength and nerve, I will open that cookbook and I will make ensaymada and I will share it with you.
Yeah. Victor, you were telling me your family gets kind of emotional when you cook as well, because the recipes are passed down from generation, and oftentimes it can be in a recipe book, which is such a gift, but also word of mouth.
Mm. Yeah. So I was taught how to cook by my grandmother, and her father is a Filipino. He came from the Philippines, and her mother is Mexican from Michoacan. And so I learned a lot of like traditional Mexican recipes. There's no recipe books. It's a literal, like, I remember being in the kitchen with my grandmother, and she would literally get like, oh, grab a pinch of this, grab this. And it was no measurement. It was just like muscle memory feel of just putting things together. And so when I would cook for my grandmother, a lot of times she would start crying because it reminded her of her father and her uncles that would come together, and they would cook, and they would do more of like the barbecuing and some of the heavier ingredients. Mm-hmm. And then someone else would be watching the pot of rice, the sticky white rice with Cal Rose. And so, you know, there's times where I tell my grandmother, I'm like, oh, hey, I made this for you. And she would just start crying and just be like, you know, this reminds me of my father. This is my brothers, my uncles. And I'm like, I made this food not for you to cry. I just want you to enjoy it.
It's amazing.
And yeah.
It's all good tears, though. And that really brings up kind of a new chapter for a lot of families, and for my family as well. Like, both of my abuelos have passed away. My abuela passed away in 2020. My Japanese grandmother passed away last summer. And it really is a shift in how you celebrate holidays, right? Because they really are the nucleus. And my grandfather is still alive, but he's in assisted living. His memory isn't that good. So it's really like kind of a shuffle, or kind of figuring out how you redefine like gathering for the holidays without the matriarchs and the patriarchs being there.
Beautifully put. And then the question becomes, you know, are we doing Friendsgiving? And that has been wonderful. And then service. You know, when you are alone with your thoughts, sometimes it gets sad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, use that sorrow as motivation to get out there and help serve some meals or put together care packages. So kind of turn that frown upside down.
And I think Thanksgiving is kind of a unique holiday in the sense, as opposed to maybe other holidays like, you know, Hanukkah or Christmas or, you know, around this time of year, in that, you know, it can really be kind of like a potluck. It really can be a Friendsgiving. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be family. It's just an opportunity to kind of break bread with each other, and no gifts, you know? It's just the quality time is the gift that you give each other.
I would argue that bringing tamales to someone's house is a gift.
It is a gift. Yeah,
and like, a labor of love.
Yeah, exactly. I spent days on this.
As well as lumpia.
Yes.
Oh, lumpia. I have a coworker, Adami. He's a photographer at KCRA where I used to work. And every holiday he would make, or he still does, he makes lumpia and he gives it away as a gift. And I look forward to it every year, getting a nice stack of lumpia for me to make at home. And just, yeah, how labor intensive it is to make lumpia. I mean, all like shaving down and whittling, all these little ingredients, are so much that's packed into that little lumpia that is so delicious.
Mm. And depending on which kind you make, you know, it could be the smaller lumpia, or it could be the vegetable lumpia with a little bit of shrimp in it, the bigger ones. So it's so much fun to explore the different types of things. As you were talking, there was something I wanted to mention that's currently happening. In the Philippines, there are so many different, you know, islands and cities and towns and such. And everybody, the national food, I would argue, would be adobo. And there is an effort by, I believe, the Filipino government to standardize the way adobo is made. And it is, there is so much controversy about this topic because everybody stands by their adobo.
There's so much passion behind food because of the history behind food, you know, and this is just such a wonderful conversation because, you know, going into the holidays, I know I'm planning on cooking stuff. The wheels are already turning on what to make. So I just want to thank the both of you for joining and also just sharing a piece of your family.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is my conversation with CAP Radio's new midday host, Laura West, and Insight assistant producer, Victor Corral Martinez, about how being mixed race shapes their Thanksgiving feast. Up next, we'll have more stories about families, the evolution of traditions, and sometimes how they can take on a deeper meaning once a big chapter is closed. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.